go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know what? I even use hand sanitizer back here in the studio before I even touch the mixer. So, hopefully it'll work. Hey, look, it's Friday on the front porch, the fourth day of December 2020. There are 27 days left in this miserable year. There are 47 days left until 2021 actually begins. And I invite one and all to participate in the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Looks like a fantastic day for folding space for longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave, 72 degrees and perfect there in Northern California. Not so perfect here, but it's 57 degrees in the studio. It's gray, and everywhere you step, it squishes, and off and on rainy. We're expecting maybe some snow tomorrow, but it's not quite brutal in here. Certainly not naked radio weather, but it's not brutal. So I'm glad for that. I did the Hi, I'm Bob part. Yeah, okay, we got that out of the way. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so that means thanks to our PayPal subscribers for the fourth day of the month. And in particular, that would be thanks to Thomas, and thanks to Paul. And thanks to David. Thank you for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep independent, liberal, progressive, commercial-free, non-capitalist radio alive and beaming our signal out to the world. Yes, thank you so very much. We closed the week with a fundraising goal of 500 and... Let me check. Yeah, No, I'm sorry, $650. $650 to close out the week. And I'm going to mention something else. You know, I talked about the trip to the oral surgeon last month, and he gave me a number that made all the blood drain out of my face, but this has to be done. So I'm going to try to figure out some way to put on a fundraiser for the additional monies. I'm sorry, I wish I had a printing press. I'd just take care of it myself. But the additional monies that I need to do this oral surgery, and with any luck at all, maybe get it done the last week of December. That's my goal. And that way, that gives me maybe New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. Let's see, what does that look like on the calendar anyway? New Year's Eve is the 30th of December. It's a Wednesday, Thursday. New Year's Day is a Friday. So if I was able to get it done on the 30th, that would give me the 31st, the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, and be back Monday, January 4th to get, you know, healed up enough to be able to talk again. Right. So the bottom line is I need to raise $5,000. And that's a tall order, but I'm going to, you know, I'll try to find some way to, you know, maybe for anybody who's interested, maybe we'll do some early entries for the eventual horn-in. you know, and I'll set up a separate GoFundMe page or something like that. I don't know how that works out. I don't know how it works out with the turnaround on the money and things like that. Or maybe we'll just use the regular Horn PayPal. Believe you me, I would rather not be doing this, but it's unavoidable. You know, there's risks of infection and, as he said to me when he was looking at it, we got to get those out before they make you sick. Meh. Because I don't want that. So we've got $650 to raise this evening, and we'll figure out something somehow or another to do to maybe be able to enable the oral surgery. Okay? So that gets all of that housekeeping out of the way, but that would be my preferred, you know, because, well, I mean, there's no guarantees in 2020, but if there's going to be a period of time when it's kind of downtime, then the week between Christmas and New Year's is probably that time. So we'll see. We'll see. And by the way, if you pop by the Horn chat room, just go to headon.live. You'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Otto Deschott and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and more. To come. Yeah, I just got a note saying you better get a second opinion. Well, I've known this oral surgeon. We have been friends and colleagues and acquaintances and whatnot for 30 years. So I trust him. I trust him explicitly. And there's really not a lot of second opinions to be gotten. I don't want to be going to Charleston and riding down a mountain and back up a mountain at the end of December. Mm-mm, a little too dicey. So that's where that stands. Let's get started with the sort of the usual subject line, hodgepodge. Bob! Today's journal will jump all over the place. Let's go back to December the 2nd, which on that day in 1930, Herbert Hoover went before Congress with a $150 million plan, that would be $2.3 billion in today's money, to stimulate the economy, but like most of Hoover's plans, the plans didn't seem to have the impact that FDR would later give them. Hoover was a humanitarian, but unfortunately, he had too much working against him during the Great Depression. Well, let's just hold on a minute there. Let's talk about old Hubert Hoover for a minute, Joey and Giraffe. Hubert Hoover was said to be a humanitarian by some, but the fact of the matter is when the Great Mississippi River Flood came along, he had free African-American men, because it was 1929, you know, or 1927, whatever. So we're well past the passage of the 13th Amendment, the ratification of the 13th Amendment. He had African-American men press ganged and chained together to build levees along the Mississippi River, some humanitarian. He was a fiscal conservative and a good Republican, and consequently he didn't think it was the business of the government to actually try to make people's lives better. The purpose of the government, according to Hubert Hoover, was to just let the people suffer and die if that's what needed to be, because that was not the purpose of government. Had nothing to do with taking care of the people the government, you know, governed. What's that, Jeffrey? Giraffe ponders the plans. Hoover's plans often seemed to get swept away as the rug was pulled out from under his ideas by extenuating world circumstances beyond his control. However, he soon realized that his country's politics were also the world's politics, and the U.S. did not live in a vacuum. See what Jeffrey did there? Hoover, vacuum. Oh, yeah. Jeffrey is the most shameless giraffe known to the world, whether live or whether wild or in captivity. Very good, Jeffrey. Yes, I don't believe Hoover was capable of marshaling a plan like the Marshall Plan for the United States of America. He would have been utterly disinterested, as a matter of fact. A further trivia note on Hubert Hoover. what he was a mining engineer, so the fact that he didn't actually give a rat's ass about human beings is not surprising. He came from the mining industry, after all. Speaking of marshals, did you and Dan Fisher mention a famous marshal from West Virginia when you last spoke? Which begs the question, who was Ralph Pierre Lecoq? Well, Ralph Pierre Lecoq was none other than Peter Marshall, the host of the Hollywood Squares, as he was born in Huntington, West Virginia in 1926, making him 94 years young. Originally, Marshall was a Broadway star who only took the Hollywood Squares job to keep his rival Dan Rowan from getting the gig. Marshall's sister, Joanne Drew, was also a famous actor from WVA, born in Logan. Peter Marshall's son, Peter Lecoq Jr., would play Major League Baseball for Kansas City and the Cubs during the 70s. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey wonders why. If your last name was Lecoq, would it not be redundant to have a first name such as Peter? Okay. Jeffrey tried real hard on that one. I imagine somewhere along the way his baseball teammates gave him the name of, wait for it, Peacock. There's a reason most giraffes can't talk. Jeffrey is so good with these issues because he always has his head, well, you know, cocked the correct way, a little to the left. Also born in Morgantown, West Virginia, was Jack Fleming, who, for my money, was the greatest play-by-play football announcer of all time. I lobbed that softball up last night for you, Bob, and you nailed it. As I would listen to this broadcast with Jack Fleming and Myron Cope, it reminded me of the ABC Nightly News with Harry Reasoner and Barbara Walters. Harry hated Barbara, primarily because he was a chauvinist pig, and eventually they were not even broadcasting from the same city, let alone the same studio. I really believe that Jack Fleming just saw Myron as a big clown, as he did tell him to shut up numerous times on the air. Cope was Jewish, and one time Fleming referred to him as a big matzo ball. Even as a 14-year-old kid, I wondered what their relationship was like off the air. Well, it was non-existent. You know, Myron had his gig on whatever it was, KDKA or one of the TV stations. Myron Cope on sports! I often wonder if maybe Myron Cope was secretly the grandfather of Gilbert Gottfried, or maybe dad, I don't know. On December 2nd, 1970, Richard Nixon came up with the EPA to help clean up the air, water, and put stipulations on fuel emissions. That after, of course, I'll add editorially, you know, the Cuyahoga River caught fire. Ever since then, and it was not the first time that had happened. Ever since then, Republicans have spent the last 40 years attempting to dismantle the agency. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, with his best.
Yes, it appears Nixon wanted to clear the air of all the dirty water he had irrigated.
Oh, dear. Speaking of clearing the air by the water, Jeffrey and I need to do just that concerning the December 3rd, 1979 riot at the Riverfront Coliseum prior to the Who concert. Jeffrey will explain.
According to Who's Who. See what Jeffrey did there?
Yes, according to Who's Who of All Time, concert patrons. Speaking of patrons, please go to HeadOn.live and contribute to Head On with Bob Kincaid. As I was saying before, I rudely interrupted myself. According to the Who's Who of All Time concert goers, Billable Rick is a Hall of Famer, as he has attended the most concerts of all time. He was even little itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny baby Billable Rick. Was probably at Woodstock. However, according to officials, Billable Rick did not actually attend the Who concert at Riverfront because of all the mayhem. As the legend goes, upon arriving at the arena, he saw what was taking place, and he picked up a 300-pound man and put him on a stretcher all by himself. He then gave Lonnie Anderson, Jennifer Marlowe from WKRP, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation after she was nearly trampled to death while covering the event, and then assisted the feds in finding the culprits. The feds were so impressed they hired Rick years later to work for them. Everybody was so impressed with this 17-year-old phenom when he told local reporters in subsequent interviews, I never actually attended the concert because it looked more like the Republican convention than a rock concert. Yeah, Republicans were literally walk-over people, and they don't care who they kill just so they can get their way. It was disgusting. Who cares about the damn concert people who died? Billable Rick would not attend a Who concert until 1986. Finally, the other night, Todd used a term, something like, streetin' it. Well, if you cannot get out in the streets in one of these towns in the greater Atlanta area, then phone bank and send money. All you have to do is Google one of these sites. Either Cobb County Democrats Mobilize, DeKalb County Democrats Mobilize, Gwinnett, G-W-I-N-N-E-T-T, County Democrats Mobilize, Fulton County Democrats Mobilize. Once you get there, it's very easy to sign up to go signing, phone banking, or simply send money to election.com. Let's go, folks. Let's start streeting it. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday on the Front Porch, December 4th, with Giraffery streeting and tweeting in Cobb County, Georgia. You're back there again? Wow. And so the streeting and tweeting challenge is on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffery. If people pony up $100, then that'll get the fundraising goal down to $550. And Joey and Giraffery will then provide $100 to the Warnock and Ossoff campaigns. So thank you very kindly, Joey and Giraffery. The matching challenge in this case doesn't come here. It goes to Warnock and Ossoff. So if we can knock the fundraising goal down to $550 on all of the Horns' behalf, Joey and Giraffery will hit another lick toward getting 50 Senate seats by winning both elections, both runoff elections, January 5th, 2021. In Georgia and Lee in New York. Remember, Georgians need to vote January 5th, 2021. I hope that Ossoff and Warnock send the right message. I do not believe that the Crooks allegation is important to voters. In my opinion, the better way to discuss differences is that Mitch McConnell will block legislation that will help Georgians. If Georgians want help from the government, they need Democrats who want to help. Look at the small businesses suffering. Republicans think you don't need help. How very Hooverian, as a matter of fact. Democrats want to help. You want businesses near your home to go bankrupt? If you're a good neighbor, Democrats will help you and your neighbors. So thank you to and thank you to Cecilia getting us started on the streeting and tweeting challenge. That takes us down to 90 to go on that, and an attempt to get us down the road on fundraising, and well, nearer to what will wind up if we can succeed, what will wind up as another Friday on the Front Porch community made miracle, courtesy of Balmer Bob. The top 10 places to locate the Donald J. Trump Presidential Library. Number 10, a scrapyard for dismantled U.S. postal equipment. Number 9, Rikers Island. Number 8, the site of the Bowling Green Massacre. Number 7, a Chinese sweatshop owned by Precious Princess Ivanka Madaddy Trump Kushner. Number 6, a Texan concentration camp for infants and small children. Number 5, The Hague. Number 4, the Four Seasons Landscaping. Number 3, the porno shop next to Four Seasons Landscaping. 2, Guantanamo Bay. And the number one place for the Donald J. Trump Presidential Library, drumroll, Moscow. Here, here, here. Yes. So that's good. Thank you, Balmer Bob. And note coming from Dave number 11. Meanwhile, in civilization, a list of free dental care clinics in California, or just near in the general Northern California area. Good God Almighty, there's 10 of them. Not so much here. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Rub it in, why don't you? And there is an anonymous When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge on the table for this evening. Thank you very kindly to our anonymous friend. If that's met, that's a traditional Horn Family Community Congregation challenge. If we can get $100 in, there'll be $100 added to it, a chance to double your money. So hopefully we'll help out Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, and then that'll take us to 550, and then if that challenge is met, that'll take us to 350. So thank you very kindly to our anonymous friend. There's a cowbell for Joey. Ah, come on, Billable Rick. There were several cowbells in there, or maybe those were mostly for Giraffe. Yeah? But Billable Rick says, cowbell for Joey. Hoover failed to realize that the U.S. didn't live in a vacuum. Hubert Hoover really sucked. Okay. That's for the both of you. Sure, why not? And remember, for those of you who have, and this courtesy of Randy Radar, if you are on if you're eligible for Medicare, and I think Scott in San Diego mentioned this as well, December the 7th, 3 days away from now, pay attention to that deadline, December the 7th, but call when they first open up as soon as possible, or else you won't get through at this late date. Because this, you know, we've got one of those administrations in place that sincerely doesn't want people to get through. I would know because the healthcare deadline is the 15th, and I've been dialing pretty much daily for a while, and you get things like, your wait time will be 54 minutes. 54 minutes go by and bupkis. And then the phone line goes dead. I'm having a hard time thinking that that's, you know, accidental. And this from Shorty in L.A. Everybody that's listening right now, you have to stop what you're doing because this is totally important, very serious. Don't get nervous. Again, put your right hand on your left shoulder. Okay, I'm good that far. Put your left hand on your right shoulder. Okay, I got it. Now squeeze 4 to 5 seconds and don't let go. Squeeze as hard and loving as you can. You know, that felt really good. It did. And I did a little letting go now while I was at it. Okay, now next. Let's do this one more time for 5 seconds, and this one is for Bob and Agnes. Ready? Squeeze. Okay, that's 10 seconds. Squeeze you later at the end of the show. Oh, where were we? Says Shorty. Oh, yeah. He said, hi, it's Bob. Smooches, sweetie pies. Says Shorty in L.A. That was a nice way to start the program. Thank you, Shorty. And let's see here. Okay. Points to Darcy. Why is he going to have a presidential library? He doesn't even read. Oh, that's disgusting, Asa. Not going to read it out loud. There's a reference to, I didn't hear. And trust me, I just ruined dinner in the Bob Kincaid, post-program late lunch in the Bob Kincaid time zone. Just reading that. I didn't hear anywhere in Balmer Bob's list. And you can thank me later that you didn't hear it. Either. I'll just, you know, sort of Odysseus through between Scylla and Odysseus with the sirens. I took that one for the team. Cowbell from Lee in New York for the multiple citations of Hubert Hoover. Please give a cowbell to the late announcer, Harry Von Zell. Yeah. And what a great straight man he was on the old Burns and Allen program on TV. Where George would routinely take a wrecking ball to the fourth wall. It's still funny. It's absolutely still funny. Time out. Nobody needed to hear that sneezing. Oh, let me check here. Okay, a couple of things to get us started. I had an email from Matt in San Francisco during the program yesterday. And I, because of the nature of the conversation as it was flowing along, I didn't get to it. And it stuck with me, so I wanted to make sure that I got to it this evening because it damned well deserves mention. Matt in San Francisco wrote, close to 33 million people have died of AIDS, HIV, since the beginning of that epidemic. It's a pet peeve of mine, Matt says, when I hear the mainstream media refer to COVID as the worst pandemic since 1917. But I understand how people of color and LGBTQ plus people are oftentimes relegated to the sidelines of historical accounts. And that is a profound and heartbreaking truth that goes hand in hand with something that I've said in the past relative to the search for a vaccine to the coronavirus. And that is, namely, since we appear to be getting a vaccine so damn quick, and I've heard any number of scientists on the radio, in print, TV, whatever, you know, this is really an amazing testament to the power of science. Vaccines often take more than 4 years to develop. And at that point in time when I heard it, I thought, yeah, tell the families still grieving over the loss of their loved ones to AIDS, HIV, that. Because we are 35 years plus into the human experience with AIDS, HIV. And there's still no vaccine. There's finally an antiviral cocktail, but there's no vaccine to keep it from actually being caught. 35 years. Never mind four. And in those 35 years, we're very close to an average of some 1 million people a year. I mean, it's not actually a million people a year. There were many more in the earliest days of AIDS, HIV. And it was a horror. It was a horror. I know that within this community, a number of people have told me privately and some publicly about the ones they loved and still love who were ripped from us in the course of that horribly botched response to a disease. And, you know, I don't know. I've never been, and I probably never will go to the Reagan Presidential Library. But I kind of doubt that there's a room there that talks about how he deliberately ignored the AIDS, HIV epidemic while pals of his, like Jerry Falwell, referred to it as a gay plague, and other Christians preached that it was some form of divine retribution against that deity's own creation. Like I said, what Matt wrote touched me. And it goes alongside a story from about 4 days ago that I've been damned well determined not to let go by the boards. And that is something out of the UK. Now, understand, please. I mean, I realize, you know, there's madness. There's more madness out there from the maggots, and we will damned well get to it. I assure you. But this deserves, because I haven't seen a hell of a lot of mention of it. but it deserves, as Willie Loman's widow said at the end of Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. The suicide rate in the LGBTQ, well, no, back up. The suicide rate in the trans community, in addition to the murders to which the trans community are subjected on an almost daily basis, the suicide rate among trans people is probably higher than the suicide rate for just about anybody else on this planet. Because trans people are likely to commit suicide at a rate of about 40%. Imagine knowing 10 people and knowing that 4 of them would be likely to kill themselves. Not because there's anything wrong with them, necessarily, but because of what is wrong with how this culture, worldwide, some places worse than others, treat them. And we're finding out more and more that people know at a very young age when they're trans, just as people know at a very, very young age that they're gay. And by extension, that they're straight. But straight people don't kill themselves at a rate of 40%. And I'm sure that the suicide rate is elevated in the gay community. But it's around 40% in the trans community. And that takes in, God, it takes in children. Children as young as, you know, fourth and fifth grade. I remember a story out of Beckley a couple of years back of a little boy who was bullied relentlessly and hanged himself. Maybe he was something like 11. And he was bullied for being perceived to be gay. And the best thing that can happen to young people who have been through therapy, who have been through examinations, who have been through studious medical, psychological, and psychiatric inquiries to make sure that it's not just a phase, that it's not just something that's because the biochemistry of the human body is completely bizarre in adolescence. The best way to bring down the suicide rate in the trans community is to let people be themselves. And in the case of young people, there's a class of drugs that they're basically referred to as puberty blockers. And what they don't impose any changes on the human body. All they do is stop puberty from happening. So that if you're a little trans boy, all the things that go into being a cis girl at puberty don't happen. And if you're a little trans girl, all the things that go into being a cis boy at puberty don't happen. It just puts a hold on things. Until the child is old enough to decide for themselves. But in the meantime, a little trans boy won't develop breasts. And a little trans girl won't get an Adam's apple and a deep voice and hair all over her body. It just freezes that developmental and you know, the growth in the long bones, things like that. It just stops all that. It pauses it. It doesn't eliminate it. It just pauses it. And it buys time for the child to sort out all the dysphorias all the dysphoria that comes with being trans. Well, we go, and it's not easy. It's not something where the kid just goes to the doctor and the doc says, here, kid, have some pills. No. It's vigorous, it's rigorous, and it's difficult. And in the case of the United Kingdom, the National Health Service is especially slow and methodical in this. But no more. No more. Because a self-righteous, imposing individual, he had declared himself trans, he had gone through the entire process, got the puberty blockers, and then decided it wasn't for him and wanted to live life as the cis female gender assigned at birth. And so got it all reversed. And then went on a goddamn jihad. She's 23 years old now. She did what's called detransitioning. And in the course of that detransition, she decided that no one else should be able to transition either. And she did. She raised a real live, no kidding, jihad against every trans child in the United Kingdom. And it made its way all the way up to the High Court of the United Kingdom. The person, the assigned female at birth, cis female, who did this to every trans child in the United Kingdom, is named Kira Bell. She's 23 years old, and she brought a lawsuit against the Tavistock and Portman National Health Service Foundation Trust because she took puberty blockers at 16 years old, and now she thinks it may have affected her ability to have children. And son of a gun, the British High Court agreed with her and issued a ruling that says that no trans child in the United Kingdom may henceforward be prescribed puberty blockers, no matter how thoroughly convinced experts, medical professionals, mental health professionals may be that they are in fact trans and that they will and that they desperately want to live their lives as the gender that they are in and of themselves. Kira Bell said,
"Well, I'm delighted at the judgment of the court today, a judgment that will protect vulnerable people. I wish it had been made for me before I embarked on the devastating experiment of puberty blockers."
What a horror she is. The idea that it'll protect vulnerable people. What it's going to do is drive the suicide rate up among the up among young trans people in the UK through the fucking roof. It is a brutal and barbaric decision. And the pettifogger for Kira Bell said that the decision opens the floodgates for expensive clinical negligence claims. In other words, he's happy because lawyers are going to get rich suing the National Health Service for providing puberty blockers. So we've taken care of Kira Bell, and we've taken care of Kira Bell's lawyers and all the other lawyers, and left some of the most vulnerable children in that country to flap in the breeze. Now, the court, you know, being a court, tried to do some baby splitting. They said that 16 and 17-year-olds may be presumed to be able to consent to medical treatment. But doctors may want to seek court orders before prescribing them puberty blockers due to the experimental nature of the treatment. On the other hand, they also said that it's highly unlikely that a child of 13 or less was competent to give consent to puberty blockers, and doubtful even that 14 and 15-year-olds could weigh the long-term risks and consequences. Yeah, fuck them too. I guess what? The 13 and youngers and the 14 to 15-year-olds, they don't have parents to step in if they are accepting and want the best for their children. And in the immediate aftermath of this godforsaken order, the National Health Service of England issued an update to guidelines saying that a court order must be sought for any new referral for puberty blockers to stop puberty in a child that desperately does not want to go into adulthood as the gender they were assigned at birth. This is disgusting, and it's heartbreaking. It applies to England and Wales. It does not apply to Scotland. And God knows this process is hard enough as it is. But if reassignment is begun, not reassignment, but confirmation is begun at an early age, when the child knows, and the parents know, and the teachers know, and the doctors know, then a lot of things that happen to the body don't have to happen, and that child has a far better chance of going through life as a happy and healthy and productive human being, as opposed to a child swinging at the end of a rope. But Kira Bell doesn't give a good goddamn about that. She doesn't like it for her, and by God, because she doesn't like it for her, nobody else needs to have it either. I'm guessing Kira Bell's a Tory, because there's certainly nothing liberal about that. Nothing at all. And so I don't know if the news out of the UK will start keeping track of the little children who begin to die as a result of this. The people who wanted this sort of thing, the children who wanted the adolescents, we're not talking about children. It's not like, you know, you're 6 years old and no. But for adolescents who wanted to have a fighting chance to live their lives as they understood themselves to be, well, since 1985 in Britain and Wales, children under 16 could consent to puberty blockers if they went from here to hell and back and were fully and completely inspected, neglected, and rejected, folded, spindled, and mutilated, tested, given batteries of examinations, including something called the Gillick Competence Test. And then they'd finally get the drugs that they desperately needed. Well, Jolyon Maugham is a lawyer and director of the Good Law Project in the UK, and they work on trans rights cases. And she said the new ruling will push families into taking children out of the country for treatment. Probably with Kira fucking Bell right on their goddamned heels. The practical effect of the judgment will be that puberty blockers will be very rarely prescribed to those under 16. Because how many parents have the wherewithal to go and hire a barrister to put on his robe and his funny wig hat and go before the court in merry old England and plead and prove that a child need not suffer? And the Reuters article points out that more and more children, because some societies are becoming more accepting and more enlightened, are seeking to transition to the gender, not that they were assigned at birth, but they themselves are. The numbers in England and Wales show that there's been a 30-fold rise in referrals to the clinic over the past 10 years. There were about 2,560 last year. And Kira Bell has stopped all of that because Kira Bell is a horrible human being. God-awful. Not content to simply advocate for herself, but absolutely washed in the conviction that it's up to her to ruin the lives of God only knows how many children in England and Wales. Imagine if you can, being, say, 13 years old, things are beginning to happen to your body. We all remember puberty. But what happens when those things that are happening to your body aren't just uncomfortable or new or maybe a little scary, but actually pose an existential threat to your existence? Existential threat, yeah. An existential threat to your well-being. What happens if you look in the mirror and it's not just like, well, gosh, I wish I didn't have these zits. You look in the mirror and you're sickened and horrified by what you see, because what reflects back to you in the mirror is not who you are. Well, we already know that for children who can't get that all too often it results in self-harm. Children who do try to come out and have parents who are not accepting are kicked out of homes, thrown onto the street. Murdered. Exploited. And Kira Bell wasn't happy enough with the number of those that are already happening in England and Wales. She wanted it to happen more. The one thing that puberty blockers can do in children assigned male at birth, it can make them not as tall as they might otherwise be. It's about it. And the reason cited by Kira Bell for interfering in the lives of some 2,500 children in the UK, well, she said that she's afraid it may have damaged her ability to have children. She did not even go into court with definitive proof that it had. She just guessed at it. Maybe it did. It might have. She worries about it. What a disaster. What a disaster for the trans children of England. And by the way, it's even harder in the United States of Trump-merica. I dare say that it's probably a little bit more civilized in far Canada. It's under consideration in another country where it's brutally difficult, namely Brazil. Brazil is looking further into allowing trans kids to have puberty blockers. I won't be surprised if stories do emerge out of the United Kingdom of trans people who have been tormented by the likes of Keira Bell, who go on to commit suicide and add or maintain that 40% suicide rate. I won't be surprised at all. Brother Deacon Asa says, this Keira Bell character sounds a lot like Norma McCorvey, who was paid by some shitbag right-wing think tank to offer up her testimony in Roe v. Wade. Yeah, she was, and I mean, Asa is not speculating or exaggerating. Norma McCorvey admitted that she accepted money in exchange for saying that she regretted her abortion. I wonder if there was some money going into Keira Bell's pocket from some gang of shitbird right-wingers. They're in England, they're referred to as TERFs, trans-exclusionary radical feminists. I'm not feminists at all. Just right-wing pieces of shit. And Brother Deacon Asa adds, by the way, the cucumbers and the anti-vaxxers on social media are caterwauling and creaming their pants over this decision in the UK. Oh, they love it. I know people in the United States that are just so happy that we can kick one of the most vulnerable populations in the world. Kick them again when they're down, and then stomp on them a little bit. And some of them even call themselves liberals. How about that? Yeah. Yeah, I know. Arnold in PA says, this is some enraging stuff you're talking about. Well, hey, Arnold, question for you. How many other places have you heard this discussed? Story's been out there for 4 days. How many other places? I mean, I ask you, what is the difference, and I'm not just Arnold, but what is the difference between TERFs grunting and hooting about puberty blockers and, say, the Westboro Baptist Church screaming, God hates fags? None that I can see. Oh, no. But Keira Bell is a goddamned hero to these miserable assholes. Because I guess I'm just funny this way. But I've always been of the mindset that we are better people when rights are expanded, and we are worse people when we seek to foreclose and contract the rights of others. And that's exactly what happened in the UK. And make no mistake, these things are contagious. In an age of pandemic, I guess it's an appropriate reference. and what effects the UK will cross the Atlantic. And I'm sure this is, there's always something, already something in the way of a movement here. The only difference being that we did not have a humane ruling that says, yeah, go ahead. Adolescents can decide for themselves after they've been put through a hellish battery of examination. So, take a moment for some pity for children in the UK. Whom the High Court there has allowed to be tortured by an officious, imposing, self-centered wreck of a human being. Well, I asked the question, where else have you heard about this story? Jeremy in Vermont, subject line, horrible UK ruling. I've not heard this story anywhere other than you, Bob, until I searched for it. Fucking horrible. Fuck all these people. Jesus H. Christ. I suspected as much. And Arnold in PA answered my question and said, nowhere else, actually, brother. Which makes me wonder where our focus is on this side of the aisle. I imagine there is a hue and cry among the trans community in this country. But once again, they don't get a lot of airplay because they don't have much in the way of power or a constituency. And that's why it was so important when Joe Biden specifically mentioned that community by name. Just being acknowledged to be alive. Being acknowledged to have a life that is valid and meaningful and worthwhile and as good as any other group of people in this country meant the world. Darlene in Connecticut with a note, wow, I hate it when the minority is given sway over the majority. So Bell is full of shit. What a narcissist. Just wondering if J.K. Rowling had a possible hand or influence in this. Oh, hell yes. J.K. Rowling is a huge TERF. There's not a trans child out there that J.K. Rowling does not despise. And she hasn't been shy about it either. And she was way in Kira Bell's corner. Darlene observing, this court decision plays right into her massively uber, overly redundancy intended wealthy hands. Rowling's been corrupted by the insane wealth she amassed through the Harry Potter series. Thank goodness the young adult actors from the Harry Potter movies spoke out clearly against Jo Rowling, directly to and in support of the trans community. I hope we hear words of support from Biden and Harris to the trans community in the U.S. when they finally take the center seat. I do too. And you know, that's one of those things about Joe Biden that's kind of it kind of goes against type. I mean, centrist and all of that. And yet, lo and behold, he's the one who went on Meet the Press and forced the hand of Barack Obama all those years ago. Barack Obama was running around the country saying, "Oh well, I think certainly I'm of the opinion that." We should have something in the way of, civil unions for the gays. And Joe Biden shows up on the Sunday talk shows and said, of course this administration supports marriage equality. And bang. Suddenly, the Obama administration spun on a dime and marriage equality became the stated policy position of the Obama presidency. Because Joe Biden acted unilaterally. And And he did the very same thing in acknowledging the trans community in the last month. So I have some hope. And he bought himself a boatload of goodwill. And I guess the last thing I'm going to say on this subject before we go to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves is this. Matt, also, the other thing I was thinking about was a note coming from Matt a couple of three days ago, evenings ago, where Matt asked, or Matt talked about his beloved spouse, his husband, saying, can they really take our marriage away? And Matt saying yes. And what a horror that must be to comprehend, to internalize. Because again, this had been the policy of the United Kingdom for 35 years. And the High Court simply took it away. They made it go away. So that children who were waiting to go on puberty blockers suddenly can't. Christ Almighty, that's a level of trauma that rises to the level of child abuse. 35 years it was the stated policy of the United Kingdom, and boom, with one fell swoop, with one sweep of the pen, it's gone, it's over, it doesn't exist anymore. Amy COVID Barrett, Brat Kavanaugh, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, Nan's Boy Neil, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas, you're damned right. They've got they have marriage equality right in their goddamned crosshairs. And they're just waiting for some right-wing think tank to bring them a handcrafted case so that they can look at John Roberts, who was instrumental in Obergefell. They can look at John Roberts. They can look at Sonia Sotomayor. They can look at Elena Kagan. They can look at Stephen Breyer and say, fuck you, buddies. Fuck all of y'all. It's our way. We're in these seats now. We got a bunch of Republican senators, and we got Mitch McConnell, the de facto ruler of the United States, and he said we should be here, and we are going to have our way. Take a moment to ponder the chaos and the tragedy that will flow from that. Says Arnold, they can take away your paper, but not your love. Fuck. Damn the man. Burn the empire. If we get 50 senators, we have the House, we'll have the presidency. Please understand that every right gained must always be jealously guarded. Remember that in the aftermath of the Civil War, free slaves, free black men got the vote. And it was brutally taken away in less than a generation. Understand the history of the civil rights movement. When counties and states shut down entire public school systems just to keep little black children from attending them. Well, Keira Bell in the UK joins that rogues gallery. And hopefully in years to come, her name will become one to be in which people spit on the ground at the mention of it. Yeah, Lou mentions, I heard it multiple times, but I listened to Times Radio out of London. Yeah, not a lot of coverage over here. At least not in the mainstream. Kind of surprises me that Rachel didn't mention it, but I'm not aware that she did. I don't know. Kira Bell, Stephen, New York, says, because my partner is in Ottawa, I take a look at the CBC a lot and watch their program, The National, which is their nightly news program. I also look at the BBC a lot, and I saw this story earlier this week on both sites. But not in Merca. And with the subject line, I'm anti-J.K. Rowling, Bill in Allentown says, I haven't heard this story until tonight, Bob. Well, maybe this is part of why this program exists. I do try to find stories that maybe others aren't necessarily making a point of. 40%. Yeah. And we are making progress. George has jumped in alongside Cecilia. And so we are $35 into Joey and Giraffe's Streetin' and Tweetin' Challenge. $65 to go on that, and then we can start on the anonymous When Billionaires Choose, You Lose Challenge. It would be great to finish the week fully funded. So, thanks to everybody who does jump in on that. Thank you very, very kindly. Let's run over to the Old Holler Tree, wherein we gather around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me okay?
Man, you sound great.
Well, I'm like 25 yards north of the man cave, sitting under the big oak tree in the moat in the movable chair.
That's some kick-ass Bluetoothage.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I first put it to the test the other day.
That's amazing. And tell people again what model that is.
Oh, geez, I don't have the book in front of me.
No worries. So it's a lovely day out there. Lucky you.
Impel.
Impel headset. I had to take it off.
Well, it's awesome.
But anyway, I was sitting here. Last night I started thinking about it there. Or actually when I was talking to my neighbor the other day. I said, 6 years ago we got flash flooded. And I'm sitting right where I was watching the water come at us out of the Salt Creek Overflow, they call it. Because it filled up with debris and brush and backed it up, made like a natural beaver dam. And it flooded us. The man cave had like 14 inches of water in it.
I remember.
Well, I was thinking about that, and then today I'm reading a story on abcnews.com about the Madeira trials, vaccine trials, where people still had antibodies after 3 months. And then there's this other story on the page. It's like, if you think you've heard about all the natural disasters in California, and you start reading this story, you ever heard of an Ark flood?
No.
Well, it's an event that's happened here before. Happened in the winter 1861, 1862, where it rained constantly for like 25 days. Dropped over 200 inches of water, and it flooded the whole interior Sacramento Valley.
Jesus.
Devastated Old Town Sacramento. And I don't know what it did to the Bay Area, but they're saying it happens like every 200 years. Now scientists are saying it could happen anytime in the next 40 years. But we haven't had any rain. We've had one rain event this so far. And with the temperature, 72 today, you say, where's winter? And I'm looking at the mountain, and there's barely any snow on it from that one storm. And I'm thinking, well, it ain't going to happen this year. But then I'm out here under the oak tree. People say, oh, when there's a lot of acorns, you're going to get a lot of rain. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
I'm driving over acorns. It's like a carpet out here. I better get back to the shop.
Yeah, you don't want to press your luck.
Well, it's, the battery on this thing is not as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
Changed it out, I don't know, a few years ago.
Well, no, I thought you said you got a new rig last week or so.
Just headphones.
Oh, okay.
And I was telling you I could go out and, you know, I was moving wood. I got a whole delivery cord of wood the other day, and I've been stacking it slowly but surely. And I can put these headphones on, and I can go out there and stack wood and listen to you.
Wow.
So I like them. Now I'm right back at the computer in the man cave. So I'll be able to mute again. But last Friday, I tested out DoorDash for the first time.
How'd that go?
Oh, it went okay. We don't have big choice here in town. But, I mean, you could watch on the computer. Gal's got an app in her car, and you can see where she's driving. A little car moves down the road towards you, and then you know when she's going to drive right up in your driveway. Come up, and she dropped it off, and she has to take a picture of it, and then she left. Show that she delivered it. And then you get an email from DoorDash that shows that picture of your front step with the delivery.
So is Uber Eats out there yet?
No, but I think I'm going to use Instacart tomorrow to go grocery shopping.
Well, you know, we've had people talking about, for instance, our buddy Dennis in Kentucky and Mike in Cascadia have talked about, you know, mowing the grass with the community. I think you're the first, Sparky, who's ever stacked firewood as part of the program.
Okay.
So it's another horn first.
Well, anyway, I'm thinking maybe I'll use it tonight to get Mexican food.
Well, that sounds yummy.
But I'm going to go shopping tomorrow on Instacart for my local grocery store that I was going to. It's got all my favorites, everything I previously purchased, so I can just go through and click all the items I want. And then I'll check it out, see if... Because you've heard about what the governor's doing.
What?
He's divided up the state into four areas.
Mm-hmm.
Northern California, Greater Sacramento area, the Bay Area, or five areas. Bay Area, Central Valley, and then the Southern California region. And if any of the regions get dropped below 15% ICU capacity, go into a stay-at-home order, kind of a shutdown thing.
Well, how much political flack is he getting for that one mistake he made of screwing up and going to that one dinner? Because on my filthy morning habit, Joe Scarborough was about to have a baby this morning.
He's apologized for that. He said she shouldn't have. Sat down there, should have remained standing or do something. He apologized for the thing because it was like 15 people and his thing was only 10. The gathering you can get, but.
Well, I thought Joe was going to turn purple in the face this morning.
Yeah, well,
hooting and grunting about the French line. What's the name of that fancy place? You know, like all of a sudden, Joe's a regular Joe who thinks it's fine dining to go to Popeye's. What's the name of that fancy place there near San Francisco where Gavin Newsom went to eat? And somebody said the French Laundry. Well, we're gonna all go to the French Laundry when this is over, because that must be some fine dining to make the. And in a moment there, Sparky, it was kind of like, I can see what's coming as soon as Trump's gone. He will ride Joe Biden like a borrowed mule every blessed day. Oh, and I just got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Shelter-in-place alert. Contra Costa County, one of the Bay Counties, just sent out an emergency text alert to shelter-in-place. Got it about 3 minutes ago. As one goes, usually the others follow.
Yeah, well, Santa Clara's already in that. They kicked the 49ers out of town.
Right, yeah. Well, now Contra Costa's in there, too.
That's right next to Santa Clara County.
Yeah. So they just fall like dominoes.
But anyway, the Northern California area is right now at 18% available ICU beds.
Jesus. Well, Beckley's at 6. But, you know, we're not going to have any meaningful efforts made by Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. Oh, hell no.
We had somebody in City Hall here come down with the Rona, so they closed City Hall down till the 7th of December.
Well, toward the end of the program last night, I mentioned a message I got from our buddy Trey in Kentucky, Stan. I think he's actually in Ohio, Stan. But he said, I'm 14 days in quarantine because my manager refused to wear a mask. No symptoms. Trey has no symptoms. He said, that's right, my manager has had the virus since Monday and just now told everyone on Thursday. And she was a chin strap mask person. Jesus Christ.
I saw one of those in the grocery store the other day with the Trump hat on.
Well, of course. I mean, the two are required fashion accessories. The one goes with the other.
He was about 10 feet away from me. I was standing in line at the checkout, and he walked past, and I went, what a dumb son of a bitch.
Did he hear you?
No.
You weren't talking loud enough then, Sparky. I had a story from a friend of mine earlier today. He told me that he was getting in the elevator at his apartment, and the elevator stopped, and this big old muscle-bound weightlifter guy about a third of his age was standing there with his chin strap, face mask as a chin strap. And he said, and my buddy looked at him and said, put your mask on, please. And he goes, no. My buddy looked at him and said, then fuck you. Don't get on the elevator. Fuck you. Fuck you. And the guy backed down.
Did he have his finger on the closed door button?
He was trying to hold. Not, he was the asshole was standing there holding the door open.
Oh, he hit that open the little bar on the end of the door that keeps it from closing.
Yeah. But he said, "Bob, that dude could have kicked my ass." I said, "Nah, you were full of righteous fury." Because he backed down. Maybe he thought about the fact that technically there's a mask mandate in Ohio, and that if some shit did go sideways, it would not wind up in his favor.
And just if it happens again, hit the panic button in the elevator. I'll call somebody to come, and your fire department or somebody.
Yeah.
I was in one last week. It was over last week when I went to my doctor's office. There's two floors and they have an elevator because there's stairs. I don't like their stairs, so I use the elevator. But I didn't have to ride with anybody. Well, I wanted to tell you, I was getting my flu shot and my 6-month checkup and meeting my new PA. I keep going through them, doctors and PAs, and she's a nice gal. And I asked her, "Would she have heard about the virus delivery?" And she said, "Well, when we do get it, we'll be notifying people." And I said, "Well, hopefully by May you'll have it, because that's when I'm going back."
Well, realistically, though, Sparky, as far as I can tell, nobody who isn't a healthcare provider or in a nursing home or a first responder, with significant comorbidities, nobody's going to get that until way past next summer. Maybe I'll be wrong. I'd be more than happy to be proven wrong.
Well, I saw people over 65 are going to be in that lineup before you got it.
Oh, sure. But I mean, healthcare.
There's a lot of us over 65 out here.
But the first
ain't died of the Rona yet.
But the first line is healthcare workers and people in nursing homes.
Yeah, but if they're able to do 50 million a month, and there's going to be more vaccines coming on. And Biden's going to enact the National Defense Act to get the virus made.
You mean the vaccine?
Vaccine. Sorry.
Well.
So I'm hoping. I'm crossing. I have my fingers crossed for May.
Yeah.
To get the shot.
Well, since the UK jumped out there early, we'll probably have a better idea, since we'll have data on a much broader, basis from them. Well, let's bounce around the room a little bit. Steve from Georgia, Stan, are you there?
Raw dog, what's going on, man?
I don't know, Gordo.
You tell me.
Well, I got your note the other day saying that Washington Journal had been a real Lulu.
Oh, yeah. Before the topic was, I can't remember what the topic was, but I knew the setup, it was just going to bring them out, the crazies out, you know. So,
Joe Biden,
it was,
yeah, Joe Biden, communist or child of Satan?
Yeah. You know, I'm so scrambled as far as all this madness being flooding at you at one time. I honestly don't remember what the topic was, but I knew, and I can go back and look and find out, but I knew it was going to call dog whistle the crazies. And sure enough, it did, by the droves, man. I thought, well, maybe Bob can use some of this for Thorn on Side Thursday.
And it wound up, we were thorn poor.
Never thorn poor, man. Not during these times.
Now, thorn poor means you've got a lot of thorns.
Oh, okay. Too many.
Yeah.
Too many. I was taking it literally, as in lack of, but there's that. So, what's good? Anything?
Got some good news. We're very close to being done with Joey and Giraffe's Streetin' and Tweetin' Challenge. That's got $15 to go, thanks to right. Jeremy in Vermont. Jeremy in Vermont took that all the way down to just $15 to go.
All right, we'll consider the $15 done, man. I've got it.
All right, well, thank you, Steve. So that means that $100 will go to the campaigns of John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe and the entire Horn community. And now we are on the table with the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. So that means we are at, if that challenge gets met, we'll get down to 350.
Cool. Well, bounce around the room and let me get that to you, okay?
Okay. Well, pop back in when, when the spirit moves you.
All right, brother. Thanks for bringing me in, man.
All right. And Billable Rick, I wanted to congratulate you on your second hole in one. Jesus Christ, some people have all the luck.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And the conversation I had just before hitting it, it's like I was like joking with my playing partner. Hey, you know, like
you were touched. You were touched by, sometimes the goddess of irony reaches out and touches us in a not bad way.
That's true.
So
that's true.
I would say, you know how it goes with a hole in one. You have to buy a round for everybody in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
But I would suggest you also order up a case of at least a gross of rubber chickens. And while the California Department of Environmental Quality is not looking, sacrifice them in a burnt offering to the goddess of irony at along about midnight. Or if you want to be extra grateful, make it half and half rubber chickens and half whoopee cushions.
Okay. That sounds good. I guess I'll take your scientific recommendation there, Bob.
So did you, in both instances, I mean, the first one you got, and now with this one, did you send off to Johnny Walker?
Oh, you know, Steve was telling me about that. I never did that.
Oh,
I
yeah, should. Yeah. You give attested proof of your hole-in-one. Johnny Walker will. Johnny Walker's got a goodie bag for you.
Okay, I'll do that. Let's see here. Johnny Walker.
Hole-in-one.
Hole-in-one.
I think they send you like a bag tag and maybe a towel. And.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't heard that they quit doing that. Let me just ask Mr. Google here.
There you go. Yeah, Mr. Google knows everything, it seems like. But
yeah, the Johnny Walker Hole-in-One Club.
Okay. Well, I'll look it up now before I forget, because I know I wrote it down and never did anything about it last time. But yeah, it's like this one was a lot different, because I mean, when I hit my iron shots, I have a hell of a lot of backspin on it. Like, I'm known to, hit the green and roll all the way off. I have that much backspin sometimes.
Well, you get a certificate suitable for framing?
Right.
Apparently.
Okay.
The Johnny Walker Hole-in-One Award.
Okay. You get any booze?
a year's supply of Johnny Walker. No, but I don't think so, and I don't know that I'd want one. It's Johnny Walker blended whiskey, for God's sake.
Right, yeah. Well, what the hell, you know, I'll send that along. I mean, I have two certificates now that I can show that show a hole in one. So, you know, what the hell, you know, I'll send those along. But
make sure you ask for the blue.
Blue?
The blue, Johnny Walker blue.
Okay.
Not the red.
Yeah, that's the only stuff that isn't stump liquor.
Okay, yeah, I'll be sure to do that. Yeah, so
red is what you use to shine your silver.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, both of these.
Yeah, you can use your Johnny Walker red to shine your claret jug.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right.
How you doing, guys?
Hey, Chris, what's going on, man?
It's a beautiful day in Portland, I'll say that.
Well, I'm glad it was a beautiful day somewhere.
Crappy in West Virginia?
Down we're entering the grim phase. It's pouring rain right now. It's 41 degrees and it's going to rain and rain and oh hey, lucky us, it turns to snow in the morning. Tomorrow's high is 37, the low is 28. I don't know. I won't do it, but I was thinking take the evening off next Thorn in the Side Thursday, cuz it's going to be sunny and 50.
Hmm.
Do something on the grill.
Yes. You might even get that weed whacker out.
Come on, please. No, I got it. Come next spring, I got to work on the weed whacker because I think the air filter's all clogged up again.
See, it's a cool 76 here, Bob, in Orange County right now as I look outside.
Shut up, Rick.
Yeah.
So can I ask a question to the group? So where does Rudy go to get his witnesses, his star witnesses? Does he go to the halfway house?
I have the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
Our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, having heard yesterday's podcast, responded because I said that there was an open debate as to whether Ms. Carone was just a Michigander or drunk. And Joy wrote back earlier and said, The only Michiganders who sound like election conspiracy Barbie are drunk Michiganders. She was, and God knows I love this word. And that's for you, Joy. She was squiffed. That's S-Q-U-I-F-F-E-D. She was squiffed.
Is that drunk Michigander?
Huh?
Squiffed.
Drunk in Michigander language?
And she reminds us the perfect, most genuine Michigan accent is Gretchen Whitmer's. Do not be fooled by low-quality imposters. And then, in answer to your question, Chris, Rudy was looking for a pole watcher and got a pole dancer instead. Sad. That's two cowbells back-to-back for Joy in Ann Arbor.
Oh, that's terrific.
A squiffed pole dancer.
Oh, jeez.
And if you want to get as drunk as her, as Rudy's gal, you can go to a Kalamazoo brewery, and the name escapes me, but there's a name of a beer called Oberon, and it's absolutely spectacular. It was they were an early entrant into the craft brew business, and they're out of Kalamazoo, and it's tremendous. And the name of the brewery, it's killing me. I'll look it up, or maybe a researcher can look it up. Oberon. It's wonderful. And you too can be a Rudy star witness. You drink a six pack of that.
Oh my God. And there was more of it. More madness earlier today. Matt Getz got absolutely burnt to the freaking ground. Earlier today when let me see if I can find it. Where'd you go, Matt Getz? Just a second. Working. Oh, there it is. He sent out a tweet, you know, complaining about election fraud. No, it wasn't election fraud. I'm sorry. This is about COVID-19 restrictions. Matt Getz tweeted, "Dear business owners, escape the tyranny, move to Florida." That's tyranny, T-Y-R-A-N-Y. He was immediately replied to with, "Jesus Christ, are you stupid?"
Trying to spell tyranny.
Tyranny, yeah. Yeah.
Tyranny. Trying. Try to spell it. I'm sure I'd spell that wrong, too. That's great.
So I take it if you're in a checkout line and you ask the checker, "Well, how are you surviving things these days?" And she says, "I'm so tired of this tyranny." I think the odds are pretty good she's a maggot. What do you all think? No?
Yeah. Yep. I've been on that horse.
Yeah, I think so. It's like, you know, how are people so fucking stupid? They don't equate the fact that, look, you know, the reason that we're doing so poorly is there's been no national leadership. Trump has totally fallen down. You know, he's been like, he's been criminally negligent, or, you know, maybe even purposefully negligent.
That's what Randy says, Rick.
Handling
this. Second degree murder.
Yeah, yeah. So I wonder if he self-pardons, that would only absolve him of federal crimes. I suppose the state could file, you know, negligent homicide charges against him. You know, on behalf of one of his citizens, one of their citizens whose death he caused, helped contribute to, you know?
Yeah. Hey, let me check over on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's George from California.
Hey, George, what's up?
I just want to jump in real quick and ask you your email address, please.
BobKincaid@gmail.com.
All one word.
Yeah.
Okay. B-O-B, I'll try it again.
Yeah, BobKincaid.
Okie dokie. I got a little email. It's just some fun stuff for holiday movies.
Okay, great. Thanks. Looking forward to it. See you, George. George is succinct. To say the very least.
Hey, Bob, that brewery out of Kalamazoo is called Bell's.
Oh yeah, I've had their stuff in the past.
It's wonderful, huh?
Yeah, they make great beer. I mean, it's there was one that was really, really, really hard to get about 3-4 years ago that my buddy Lewis at Secret Sandwich Society got 4 pony kegs of.
Oh.
And it was bourbon barrel aged.
Oh.
And God bless them, for once it wasn't all hops and, you know, a molecule of malt.
No, it's not that. You can't do that with bourbon aged beer. It's not going to taste like that.
Well, I mean, I'm not hip enough.
Yeah.
You know, well, I don't have a shirt from a vintage clothing shop from some garage with the name patch on it that reads Mo. And so I can't drink highly hop beers.
Well, I'm in Portland, so that's pretty much what we got here.
Well, yeah, and out there, that shirt's the uniform, isn't it?
It pretty much.
Along with the carefully tended facial hair?
Yeah, there's that.
It kind of blew my mind when I found out that there are actually, you know, because, you know, women have hair straighteners and you know, hot, you know, hair curlers and crimping irons and bumper jacks and stuff. I had no idea that guys had moved into the realm of doing that. I mean, there are irons for your beard?
I'm not that hip. I haven't shopped for one of those yet. I just got me a manscaping device.
Golden, pony boy. Stay golden.
I'll stick with that. I don't think I need the beard curling iron. And I certainly don't need a curling iron for down there either.
And suddenly, dinner in the Central Standard Time Zone takes a beating.
Curly fries for everyone.
And if a ball goes into the stands, it's yours to keep.
So, Bilbo, you got another hole in one. Congratulations. That's incredible.
Hey, thank you, Chris. I mean, it was like, this was actually more fun in some ways because it was probably a more nicely struck shot, you know. It was like real high and landed like 8 feet past the hole and then gently rolled down. And I only saw the last 2 or 3 feet, you know, because I didn't look up until my buddy yelled, you know, to get my attention, and damned if it didn't go in. I mean,
What did he yell to get your attention? Was it did he yell, "It just went through the windmill"?
No. No, I think he said, right. There you go. Good one, Bob.
Thank you.
I think he said, "Oh shit," or "Oh my God," or something like that, you know? And that just got my attention.
Oh my God, out of the elephant's snout and into the hole.
This one was different, though, because it was all backspin, you know, rolling in on the one.
Was it a regulation course?
No, it was a par 60 course. Yeah, this was like an 87-yard hole, so they have a lot of short holes. They only have par fours, like six par fours and 12 par threes. So, and the par fours, you could probably...
I was going to say, can you drive the par fours?
Well, actually, the funny thing is, the hole before, I was using my buddy's ball. He gave me 2 holes before, so I hit it over the ravine, you know, because I thought I was going to lose it, and I didn't. And I got a par on that hole, and I got a par on the next hole. Should have had a birdie on the next hole. And then I came up to the other hole, the par four, and drove it like 240 yards over the green. It looked like it was going to be short of the green on the left, just to the left side of the green. And it hit something and kind of rolled into a ravine on the right side all the way across the green. And so I thought the ball was lost, but I looked for it and found it. And that was the very ball that I used to make the hole in one. And I didn't make the mistake of using that again on another hole because I figured I better save that ball. You know, it was one of those Callaway soccer balls, but a pink soccer ball. So it was exciting. The first one I made back in December 13th was different because that one had some topspin on it. This one had all backspin on it. That one kind of bounced like twice and went right in the hole. And I don't think it would have gone in the hole if I'd hit the same shot today, because the holes, they have like, because of COVID, they have like a plastic piece from the bottom of the hole halfway up to the up the towards the top of the hole, so it can bounce out really easily, you know. But the one I got just was really smooth and rolled right in and just stayed in. Yeah, it's like really, really unbelievable. I've been playing golf for like off and on for 40 years or so, with about a 25-year gap there. And yeah, it's like, I don't know what the deal is here. I guess I'm just not taking it too seriously, you know, just having fun at it. I think that's what maybe, you know, takes the pressure.
You got to relax. You got to be the ball, Betty. Be the ball.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I like you, Betty. I like you, Betty.
Yeah, yeah, and to have two of them like within less than a year is even more amazing, you know. I was just reading a story about a guy who hit an albatross last summer on a Kansas City course. He went like,
is that like a birdie and a half?
No, that's a hole in one on a par four. There's only been one recorded par four in PGA Tour history by Andy McGee at the 2001 Phoenix Open. But this guy, I guess the odds of that are like either, I guess the Double Eagle Club says the odds are 6 million to 1 against getting a hole in one on a par four, but others say it might be 1 million to 1. And this guy hit it was like a dog leg par four. He hit up into like a stiff breeze and, went from left to right. I guess it faded, and then he got up to the green and was looking for the ball. He thought he overshot the green, used a 3-wood, 280 yards, and didn't see it in the front. Didn't see it in the front.
Huh? 3-wood, yeah. 280 yards, and overshot the green.
That's what he thought. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Big hitter, yeah, big hitter, the llama.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, I guess it's one of the few things you can do. Now, the golf course I play at in LA County, because of the increase in the Rona in LA County, you've probably seen it all over the news lately, the last couple of days, our positivity rate's up to like maybe, I thought I heard as much as 12% in LA County. So they're going to start shutting shit down. And the golf course I play at is not going to allow anybody to play with anybody else from a different household. So you'll have to play by yourself if you want to play. So I just hope I don't get a hole in one playing by myself.
Well, that's the old joke where God booms down and tells the preacher who's playing hooky from preaching on Sunday, who you gonna tell? Yeah. It's not worth telling the whole joke. Hey, I just got something interesting from Lee in New York. Not that everything Lee in New York sends isn't interesting. Apparently, at the New York Times, they have had something where you could input your data, and they'd give you an idea of where you stand relative to getting the vaccine. So that's why the subject line of this email is New York Times Vaccine Queue Estimate. I answered their questions, and I rank low priority. I think I'm getting the vaccine in 2025. Below is what it told me. Based on your risk profile, we believe you're in line behind 268.7 million people across the United States. When it comes to New York, we think you're behind 16 million others who are at higher risk in your state. And in Queens County, you're behind 1.8 million others. So I know there's a lot of hope for this thing. But the bottom line is going to be masks, and it's going to be masks for as long and far as the eye can see. That's what matters right now. We had the announcement out of the Biden transition team yesterday that they will, they're going to ask America to wear a mask for the first 100 days of the administration. And he will require masks in all federal buildings and on all interstate public transport, so airlines, buses, trains, et cetera. And the idea being that within 100 days, we'll start getting the vaccine out. And I know he's going to bust his ass, but the logistics involved are simply crushing. When you're trying to, you know, vaccinate 350 million or so human beings. So, I mean, I'm not trying to pour cold water on anything, but we're gonna have to continue to be careful. And, the vaccine is good for 3 to 6 months. How are they possibly going to work the logistics out? I mean, by the time they get done giving everybody the first round of vaccine in the first group, it'll be time to give the group the second round of vaccine in the first group, and then they'll be working on the second group at the same time. And meanwhile, our buddy Randy Radar is not sanguine either. Come on, Bob, we're an empire. Our military will get it first. And I got to figure that there's some sort of mechanism in place there to vaccinate the military early.
Yeah, they're always the guinea pigs, Bob, right?
Well, they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm not trying to be a little ray of sunshine, but, you know, it is what it is. And, We're almost to the top of the third hour, and just a reminder, the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenges on the table. If that is met to the tune of $100, if there's $100 out there, then that will take us down to $350 to go to finish the week, and we'll be making headway on a bona fide, genuine Friday on the Front Porch community made miracle. So there we go. So that was Lee in New York's experience with the tracker. Let me see here. Okay. Let's see here. This is probably where Giuliani hired her from. Giuliani's whistleblower, Melissa Carone. Explore talent. Acting modeling profile, Melissa Carone. Actually, she had been working some sort of freelance IT job. She'd had a job at Ford that she blamed the Democrats for losing. And she also had a charge, although not a conviction, for computer-related crime. So there's that.
Randy did a number on her earlier today.
Oh, I can only imagine. Was it a guaranteed bona fide Randy Rhodes takedown?
Yeah, she went into her back history and looked at the crime she was charged with and what she pled to and all the rest of it. And Randy took her part pretty good.
Good. How you doing, Roger?
Well, I'm doing all right. I just found out that I'm behind, oh God, what was it? 26,000 people in Lane County, Oregon, behind 265,000 others in the state of Oregon, and behind 23 million people across the United States. And that's age and, let's see, I told him I was 75, which is true. And I told him I'm not a healthcare worker, essential worker, first responder, or teacher. And I have a COVID-related health at risk because I, at this point, I'm still a cancer survivor. But that still put me behind 23 million people in the United States. And they're not even talking about having 23 million doses of vaccine until probably sometime next year. So I guess I'm just going to hole up in the house.
Well, yeah, keep observing all the protocols and keep wearing that damn mask.
Yeah, I'm trying.
I mean, honestly, it would be kind of nice it would be kind of nice, I think, if President Biden would use the Defense Authorization Act to maybe ramp up production of real live genuine N95s.
Well, that would be nice, but I can't see him using the Defense Production Act to ramp up the production of the vaccine, because if you opened up a new factory, all the quality control tests that would have to be done on the new factory would cause that vaccine to have to go through all three stages of testing before it became viable.
Right.
In my mind.
Yeah, you don't, I mean, like I said, I fully expect that the Sputnik V vaccine is comprised primarily of old warehoused Putinka vodka, you know, that they're going to start mandatory vaccines with over in Mother Russia.
Well, they did say that if you injected disinfectant, it might work.
Well, you won't have to worry about the Rona anymore because you'll be dead.
Yeah, well, it just depends how much they give you.
But then again, I think that Giuliani's poll worker, poll dancer last night, or day before yesterday, I'm pretty sure she'd been drinking some disinfectant.
Well, there's probably a little bit of difference between mainlining it and ingesting it.
Well, look, if you drink enough 75% alcohol, say Bacardi 151, you'll get where you want to go.
Oh yeah, real quick.
And there's not just a hell of a lot can live in that, Roger. I mean, you know, you're the food biologist here.
Well, my experience with the Ron Rico 151 goes back a long, long, long time, and you need a snowbank, some Weiler's lemonade, and Ron Rico 151, and you're up in the mountains in the summertime, and it's called a mountain margarita.
Well, bust my buttons.
And you get yourself your cup full of nice, fresh snow. You want to make sure it's not yellow.
Right.
And sprinkle the Weiler's lemonade over the top of it, and then drizzle in some Ron Rico 151.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean the Weiler's lemonade powder. Okay.
The Weiler's lemonade powder.
Yeah.
Fresh snow out of a snowbank, and 151. I mean, if you're backpacking booze in the mountains, you want to make damn sure you're carrying as much punch in the alcohol as you can get. And
sure.
Ron Rico 151 was the flavor of choice. Either that or some Kentucky moonshine that one of the people on one of the trips I was on had. And
Ooh.
That was also just good, just over snow. But
it's good anyway, it's good over snow. It's good to fill your Zippo lighter. I mean, you know, a million uses.
Yeah. Eddie, I kind of got a question for Rick and the whole Marianne here. If Trump were to issue a bunch of pardons and it could be proved that the issuance of pardons was in effect obstruction of justice of the person who issued the pardons. In other words, if Trump, by pardoning himself, was a clear obstruction of justice to a conspiracy, his crime family, would that not be sufficient cause to somehow question his ability to do those pardons? Because they were not being done in the spirit of the way the Constitution was written, They were done to obstruct justice and putting himself in the position of being in charge of his own judicial evaluation of the acts committed.
So, Roger, aren't we talking about basically another quid pro quo, right? I'll give
well,
you
no, no. And you don't what I'm getting at that. Here huh? is that if I am engaged in a criminal conspiracy,
mm-hmm. which we know he is, sure,
and I somehow manage to remove anybody who could testify against me in the criminal case, that would be obstruction of justice.
Yeah,
and
but
obstruction
Roger,
of the, justice in and of itself.
I'm going to break your heart in a minute.
Yeah.
All right, good. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I was going to break his bubble as well, Bob, but you go first.
One, in the waning days of the Clinton administration, he pardoned a really vile human being named Mark Rich. And most people hated Mark Rich for his, you know, financial skullduggery, and then he went and hid out in Switzerland. But here in West Virginia, we hated Mark Rich for a much more close-to-home reason, because he wrecked, he's the man who bought and then wrecked Ravenswood Aluminum. So it didn't, when Clinton pardoned Mark Rich, it didn't do him any favors. And it was damn near impossible to defend, too, I might add. But beyond that, we have to remember George Herbert Walker Bush, Roger.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In the waning days of his one term, he said he wanted to pardon one of the Iran-Contra assholes.
Cap Weinberger.
Yep.
I think.
I'm pretty sure it was. And that's when his attorney general, a young up-and-comer by the name of Bill Barr, said, "No, Pappy. In for a penny, in for a pound." And on the way out the door, George H.W. Bush pardoned the entire filthy Iran-Contra convict gang, because each and every one of them could have, I mean, there's really not a counter-argument to it, each and every one of them had the ability to spill the beans on George H.W., and everybody just said, well, that's his prerogative as the president. Even though George H.W. Bush had been involved in a criminal conspiracy with every last one of the little rotten bastards.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't pardon himself.
No. He didn't pardon himself, but he didn't have to, because anybody who could testify against him had been pardoned. And so basically they got what they wanted or needed. And, you know, the interesting thing is, after those pardons, the special prosecutor, Lawrence Walsh, was just livid. And there was a real excoriating, might have been an op-ed he wrote or something about, you know, how that was just so outrageous that H.W. Bush had done that. And that was, it was an obstruction of justice. So, you know, unfortunately, Roger, there is a history of presidential pardons, lots of dirty dealing, and lots of questionable pardons. But the problem is that the power stated in the Constitution of presidential pardons is so great that it's very difficult to even limit it. And there's a fairly decent case that could be made that even a president can self-pardon. You know,
now we need to go back a little bit further. And that is that the Constitution was created sort of as a North American continent evaluation of the English history. And I believe it was James I or James II who got himself in serious hot water, and because he did that divine right of kings number, and I believe it ended up getting his head stretched out across a log. And the British common law from the mid-1600s, I think it was, became incorporated and the Constitution was written to prevent that divine right of the executive branch. And so the argument could be made that the original intent of the framers of the Constitution was for the president to be able to grant this pardon to people, but not to himself. And that any argument, any pardon that he makes, if it's protecting himself, he is assuming the divine right of kings, which the founders of the Constitution were attempting to eliminate in writing the Constitution, and just shove it right up Amy Coney Barrett's ass and a few of the other originalists and say, hey, look, the writers of the Constitution were very carefully not creating an imperial presidency. And the actions of this man, I don't care what happened before, that was wrong what happened before. What has happened now is a direct contradiction to the intent of the framers of the Constitution of creating a omnipotent president.
Well, and the Federalist Papers make that abundantly clear, and the notes on the constitutional ratification debate make that abundantly clear. If I had if I could magically make Dr. Bill appear, he could lay it out chapter and verse. But that was precisely one of the things that people were worried about when they talked about the presidential pardon power. And it was explicitly stated that the president could not, should not, and must not be able to use the pardon power to frustrate the examination or prosecution of his own criminal undertakings. I mean, it's there in black and white. So what that means is if this thing goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, then those diehard noted textualists and originalists will suddenly, well, you know, the dog's going to eat that part of the Federalist Papers.
Well, I think what'll happen...
It comes back then as a win-win, because he either does it and it's proven to be wrong, but the right-wing assholes go for the imperial president, and they are shown to be anti-American against the Federalist Papers, even if they agree that he can do it, or they go with what they say, that they're contextualists, and fry his ass. It's a no-win situation for an originalist.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Why do we care?
Well, we're supposed to be...
Oh, you... Motherfucker in an orange jumpsuit.
Well, you're not... I mean... You know, what federal crimes, I don't even see that's the real meat and potatoes are not federal crimes. The real meat and potatoes are the crimes that he committed in New York and any other state. I mean, I'm not saying that I personally would, you know, want.
Well, I agree. I agree with you in a nuanced fashion, Steve, only different. You don't set yourself up to do tilting at windmills. While it's a great scene in Don Quixote, is not a productive undertaking. That's why Don Quixote is a madman. Instead, instead of pushing for a decision that may very well set a precedent that none of us wants, let the Southern District of New York indict him on the things for which he is already an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yes.
Because now that he's on his way out the door, that statute can be pursued, and it will not toll. It would have tolled had he gotten a second term. But he's going to be a private citizen, and he's already an unindicted co-conspirator, and for all I know, they're going to rip the damn seal open on somewhere between 2 and 4federal counts on January 20th or 21st.
But if he writes his pardon in the same way that Jerry Ford wrote the Nixon pardon, which I read here just this morning, basically it was any and all crimes that Richard Nixon may have committed from the date of inauguration to the date of resignation, he absolved him from all liability. Now, if the Mueller report charges are federals and Trump uses the same verbiage as Jerry Ford did, then how can unsealing the Mueller report as the unindicted co-conspirator hold water? Because those are federal crimes, aren't they?
Well, I don't think what Mueller said were crimes. That what we're talking about is the Southern District, which is aside from the Mueller report, which is why when Mueller saw crimes, he referred them there.
But they were federal crimes.
No, I understand. I understand. I have to be honest with you. I think it would be delicious for him to pardon his kids, because then his kids can be compelled to testify against him.
Unless they have a reasonable fear of self-incrimination as to certain state charges, state law charges.
But they've been
pardon doesn't cover.
But in an SDNY investigation, I see what you're saying.
So what you're saying, Rick, is that they could be forced to testify on the federal crimes unless by testifying to a federal crime, they would also be self-incriminating on a potential state crime. And then they could refuse to answer.
Yeah, correct, because many of the same acts that are violations of federal law are also violations of state law.
Right, but you could also couldn't there also be a grant of limited immunity, transactional immunity?
Yeah, but that's aside from the pardon.
Yeah, that's possible, Bob, I imagine. I mean, I suppose it could be crafted so that, but you have to make sure that the testimony that's compelled doesn't necessarily implicate them for, of state crimes. That was the problem that the feds had with Ollie North, with their limited grant of immunity. And it got screwed up. Yep, and it was his conviction was, overturned on appeal because they didn't do the waiver of immunity properly. It was too broad. It was too narrow of a waiver of immunity. So I'm actually looking at the pardon clause in the Constitution. It's very very short. It's part of Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 of Section 2 at the tail end of Clause 1, and it simply says. And he, referring to the president, shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. So he wasn't impeached for paying money to Stormy Daniels necessarily. I don't know. So I think you could make a decent case as a textualist that, look, the pardon power even allows the president to grant himself a pardon. I'm not saying that's a good result.
If you go to the notes of the convention and you go to the Federalist Papers, the statement on the use of the presidential pardon is pretty clear. So if we're all about the intent of the framers, it's right there, which is why I say that their copy of the Federalist Papers will be eaten by their dog.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because originalism is a fraud.
Yes, but if you're a textualist, not necessarily an originalist, the plain text of the Constitution, the pardon power doesn't prevent a self pardon. It just says that you can't issue a pardon in a case of impeachment. So for example, the president is impeached
That is per se unpardonable.
Yes, that's per se unpardonable. So I think even if he grants the pardon to himself, he could still be prosecuted for that whole Ukraine business that he was impeached for, I think.
Hey, Rick?
Somebody's got the guts to
it depends on how the pardon's framed, Rick. You know, witness the way that the pardon language played out for Richard Nixon. And remember, Richard Nixon had to be convinced to accept it.
Yeah.
Let me ask a question. The more I think about what Rick just read, the more I think that the Constitution actually does support a self-pardon. And here's why I say that. He can't pardon himself for impeachment. I think the argument, therefore, is, well, if they didn't want him to also be able to pardon himself for federal crimes, then they would have put that in there. They said you can't self pardon for impeachment. They're silent on the federal crimes issue, so he can pardon himself for federal crimes.
But any federal crime would be grounds for impeachment.
Okay, let's
not necessarily.
Let me go back and nerd up real good since Roger's always already taken us to the days of merry old Engeland. let me take us further back to those thrilling days of yesteryear and the Roman Republic. There's a brilliant book. I bought it. I'm reading it on Kindle now. I heard about it on my filthy morning habit. But this guy's a legitimate scholar, and in many ways it's like reading Dr. Bill. His name is Thomas E. Ricks. He's a history professor from Yale. And he wrote a book called First Principles, What America's Founders Learned from the Greeks and Romans and How That Shaped Our Country. Now, I'm not very far into it, but this conversation sort of triggered me on one point. Part of the reason that the Roman Republic fell apart and went to pieces is because they got to a point where every consul practically at the end of his term, well, he would be given a proconsul position to go and govern some province. But his political enemies would begin to agitate for his prosecution. And that is precisely why Caesar crossed the Rubicon. Because the patricians, the optimates, the best men of the Senate, which would be the Republicans of today, they were howling for his head because he was done in Gaul and he had made a fortune. He'd plundered Western Europe, you know, from the Rhine west, and had made himself fabulously wealthy. And they wanted him to give up power because you could not enter what was called the Pomerium of Rome with an army. And you could not even enter Italy proper with that army. And so Caesar was faced with a choice. I've either got to go down there and kick their asses, or they're going to kill me. And, this was just the upshot of what had been happening for a couple or three generations in the Republic. And make no mistake, and this goes to what Steve was saying, make no mistake, the founders and framers damned well knew that. And they did not want, they recognized that their experiment in constitutional governments would fall apart if every president sought to prosecute the outgoing one. And so, as a consequence, a self-pardon might very well be constitutional within the ambit of what the debate says about using it to further his own criminal conduct. Let's see. I've got a note here from Darlene in Connecticut. Pardons can't be for crimes to be committed. Amicus briefs have been filed with Emmett Sullivan in D.C., indicating that the pardon for Flynn is too broad and cannot encompass future crimes as it apparently does. The party filing the amicus, Free Speech for People, also claimed that the DOJ won't present evidence in the interests of the people of the U.S. as it's supposed to, so they're attempting to alert the judge to this via the amicus brief. Don't think for one second that Trump won't attempt broad pardons for his kids. Per Andrew Weissman, Trump obstructed justice at least 6 times, as documented in the Mueller report, and therefore he must be prosecuted for obstruction of justice once he's no longer president. But the counter to that is a note I got from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, years. Shouldn't we citizens expect to be hearing about untold amounts of crimes that have been committed by this administration? Do you think this will be just another in a long line of looking forward instead of looking back, instead of addressing the issues in order to avoid the further corrosion of democratic principles in the future? And the other day on my Filthy Morning Habit, I heard something about along these lines. I forget who was saying it. Maybe it was from Obama's new book or whatever. I don't remember. But some line about how as Obama was being inaugurated in his first term, and the motorcade went down Pennsylvania Avenue, that he saw people bearing signs saying "Impeach Bush," and he says something in the book about how he felt bad for George W. Bush. And I'd like to know more about that, because that made me power cringe.
That's downright, in the words of Susan Collins, troubling.
Yes, that's Susan Collins, right? Oh, and that's I have an announcement.
Disconcerting, even.
I have an announcement to make. Thanks to Zed, out in Iowa. We've knocked down $50 of the $100 When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. It's critically important that we get that challenge met and then hopefully take a bite out of the remaining $350. That if we knock out 50 more beyond the 50 that's needed, that'll get us through yesterday. But it would be great if we could finish the last 350. 400 counting the 50 remaining on the challenge, and finish the week fully funded.
That's, hey, Bob, just
critical. Yes.
Bob, I have a question. Is Zed one of the men in black?
Zed was one of the men in black, but
I know that was Rip Torn.
Yeah. Russell's not an intergalactic kegger.
One galactic standard week.
24 hours. No, 1 hour. 1 hour.
No, 1 hour. Yeah, one hour.
You're not talking about Zed from Pulp Fiction? You remember him?
Yeah. No, I always think of Agent Zed in Men in Black. Okay. I'll see here, Junior.
Does anyone see my icon there?
Yes, the queen.
The coin.
No.
Oh, you changed it?
Yeah. See if you can figure out who it is.
What? Oh, it's not the queen?
No.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Can't see it now. All I get is the SP.
I see your name, and I see the coin.
Oh, interesting, because I took the primary icon from the First Church of Jesus Christ Elvis.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, that's definitely
Jesus
not.
Christ Elvis?
Yeah, the First Church of Jesus Christ Elvis. Just Google it.
Okay.
That's the Alabama 3.
Yeah, I'm a member of the Church of Buffett Orthodox. We don't listen to anything after one particular harbor.
And where's the Garden of Eden, Margaritaville?
Which reminds me, Roger was talking about those Alpine margaritas. There's a soap company in Arkansas. And I bought a cake of their soap while I was down in Alabama, and God, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I can't remember the name of the soap company. Maybe if Haley's listening, she can check in. But the name of this soap was Margaritas in the Arctic, and it was like crack in soap form. Man, you lathered up with that stuff, and you just got. You got this refreshing blast of lime and this cooling menthol thing going on. Whoa. It was fantastic.
Soap.
Hey, Steve, Stephanie Miller, she has a bit in the morning. the Mitt Romney outrage meter.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've heard that. Yeah, it's very funny.
He is extremely concerned. Yeah, I was very concerned the other night when my roommate assaulted me.
Oh.
By putting his hands around my neck and squeezing.
That really happened, Steve?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yep. You?
Yep.
Damn, sorry, bro. Steve.
Yep. Jesus. And threatened to stab me.
Maybe time to reevaluate your situation, brother.
Oh, yeah. We'll be leaving very, very soon. I already found a place. So.
Good. Good, Steve. Jeez.
That's scary shit.
That's a whole different meaning of staying safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think in this day and age, you're concerned with getting COVID, but geez, you don't expect your roommate to strangle you, you know?
Yeah. No, he, yeah. Yep.
Well, stay safe, my friend, by all means. And that means that there's more meaning to that than just, you know, wearing your mask and not getting coughed at by people, by hillbillies with tobacco crumb covered tongues.
You know what? I think I've said.
Steve, why did you start rooming with Rudy Giuliani?
Hey, you're overdriving, Joey. Back off, buddy.
Yeah, Joey, you always come in hot as hell, man. What are you doing?
Well, yeah, seriously. When did he start rooming with Rudy Giuliani?
He wouldn't do that. He would have just tried to bite me on the neck.
No, he would have dribbled hair dye on you.
Joey's swallowing his mic or something, man.
Hey, Joey, happy news. Your challenge got met, so Ossoff and Warnock get another $50 each. Thanks, man.
I sent it to him. I heard.
Good man.
Nice job, Joey.
I saw Giuliani in a movie theater once.
You're allowed to overdrive. It's cool.
I saw him in a movie theater once.
Was he wearing a trench coat?
Well, he, right. No, I was just waiting for the movie, and he came in by himself, and I almost said to him, why are you by yourself? It's because no one will want to fucking spend time with you, you old fucker. But I thought, nah, probably not good to say that.
Was he hanging out with
Pee-wee? He wouldn't hang out with anybody. No one wants to be.
Why are you here by yourself? Couldn't you get a cousin to come to the movies with you?
Or one of your mistresses.
Diddling, ding, 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 ding. Hey, on the pardon front, I've got a note from Lou. The only opinion so far provided by the Justice Department from the New Yorker, December 3rd, yesterday. At this point, Trump is in all likelihood considering two possible self-engineered pardon scenarios, both addressed in a memo from 1974 that the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, those fuckers. That was just a nefarious time for the OLC. Provided on whether Richard Nixon could pardon himself. The memo looked askance at a self-pardon, quote, under the fundamental rule that no one may be a judge in his own case, unquote, but it explained that if the president were to invoke the 25th Amendment to declare that he is temporarily unable to perform the duties of the office, his vice president, upon becoming acting president, could then grant him a pardon. Man, that's exactly what we've been saying for almost.
I was just like, Bob, didn't I pose that hypothetical? Like,
yeah, and me too. Both before and after the congressional attempt to remove Trump through impeachment early this year, the 25th Amendment was widely discussed because of concerns about Trump's mental instability. Trump could have the last laugh invoking that amendment so that Mike Pence could grant him a pardon.
What if Mike Pence says, "Go fuck yourself"?
Well, he would be acting president.
He's not going to say that to Daddy.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yes, Sparky.
Have the ability to pardon.
Wait, Billable, wait. Sparky, go.
Oh, I just wanted to know if anybody heard Lawrence Tribe's explanation to Lawrence O'Donnell the other night.
No.
About self-pardon.
No.
I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was pretty much, you can't do it according to the Constitution. The way he interprets it.
Right.
Well, yeah. Depends on how the nine black robe justices interpret
it. That's what matters. Yeah. Actually, how six or five interpret it.
Five. Mm-hmm. Right. Five.
And
five
I think
nine.
I think we're probably rock solid as to how it'll be interpreted by those noted originalists and textualists, Amy Covid Barrett and Brat Kavanaugh and Pubes on the Coke Can and Slappy and or Slappy and Sammy Bad Breath and Ann's Boy Neil.
Don't you mean Amy Offred Barrett?
No, Amy Covid Barrett after the church
Auntie
ruling.
Auntie Amy. Yeah.
I know. You know why I said Offred, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Of Donald.
Well, Bob, one other thing. That person you were trying to add to the conversation didn't join.
Oh, that was Todd. I must.
I couldn't ring him back. It wouldn't let me ring him.
No, he's on a landline. But Todd, if you want to jump in, jump back in. I was just slow on. I was slow on the pickup.
Hey, if Darlene is listening, I never got an email from her about the candy. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but I've probably not. I'm not that presumptuous. I'm off Facebook for a while. I think I'm getting ready to delete the whole thing rather than just deactivate. If she doesn't have my email, I would ask you, Darlene, to email Bob about what you want if you've made your decision so I can make arrangements to get your stuff. Oops.
And Darlene, we need a Beefalo update too. Buddy.
Yeah, Buddy.
That's right. Was he cooked rare or medium?
Oh,
now quit that. He's still on the lamb. I have to believe he's still on the lamb.
Unless they shuffled him down to Florida. He could be DeSantis' master.
Well, I mean, he could go west from Connecticut and shuffle off to Buffalo.
Cowbell.
Thank you.
Beefalo bell.
Sometimes I'm still proud of yesterday's dickhead Donnie's drilling den.
That's good. That's a lot of alliteration there.
Oh, and by the way, Margaritas in the Arctic comes from the Sterling Soap Company. Sterlingsoap.com, unpaid product placement. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa and to Ralphs, the serving as the ad hoc horn research department this evening. Good stuff.
So is everyone enjoying, like, the Republicans down there in Georgia, like, eating their own?
Oh, it couldn't happen to nicer folks.
Yeah.
And they're not done yet. Tomorrow, Donnie goes down there.
Yeah, that's going to be I don't tune into those damn things, but I'll be strongly tempted to. Just to see if it turns into the grievance festival we all expect it to be. You know, he'll be down there. He'll be down there nominally to campaign for Kelly Loeffler and David Debate Chicken Perdue. But you know how it is.
Vote for him. Now let's talk about me.
If that, Bob, I was just going to say.
Who's paying for all the extra security?
Steve in Georgia.
Anymore.
Steve in Georgistan, probably. Yeah.
Okay, let me.
Wait a minute, Chris. Wait a minute. You were going to do all the heavy lifting, remember?
Oh, it was me?
Yeah, that's
you were drinking at the time.
Yeah,
right.
Go ahead, get it, Steve.
Well, I'll bring my slingshot.
Okay.
Oh, and I think we've got Todd this time. Are you there, Todd?
I'm here. I had to go to the pork chops and make sure they didn't burn. How's
Hi,
everybody?
Todd.
Hi.
Brother Todd.
My brother Steve.
What's shaking, my man?
I was in and out, you know, just, you know, we had to do stuff, crazy stuff at work, and then running errands. It's Friday, it was raining and cold, you know what I mean? And I was in and out of the program, but when you guys started talking about this, the pardoning power and the Constitution, and then Bob, the host, brought up the Iran-Contra thing, how many years is a generation?
Depends on who's counting, but either 20 or 40.
okay. Because, you know, I feel like too many people forgot what a nasty individual Barr was. And, you know, and they kept saying, well, he's going to, you know, hold up. And I'm like, I don't know about all that. You know, because what Detteron Contra, and it all ties in with Maxine Waters. Remember, you know, they're still out there on YouTube. When it finally came true, well, yeah, the CIA was dumping drugs in Los Angeles and everywhere else. It was cocaine everywhere. You couldn't find no good herb. It was just coke everywhere. And a lot of people haven't forgotten that shit, but I guess a lot of people have. And it's not about street level stuff, but it's about, you know, integrity. And here we are. And we have to discuss this nonsense about the president pardoning himself. And now the Federalists, I don't know, I sent Bob a text. You know, the Federalist Society, they're all entrenched now. And it's all about how they interpret the Constitution. Because the way you describe it, now you have a bunch of attorneys now on the line, you know, in the family right now listening. And it's kind of disgusting because it's all about interpretation.
It's disgusting it's disgusting because it's all a fraud.
It's a fraud. That's exactly what was going to be my next statement. This that shit that Scalia made up, it's just a made up bullshit originalist. Because if you want to go down that road, that means I'm three-fifths of a person. I mean, it means a whole lot of things. I'm sorry. I'm getting too loud. I'm not being social.
No. You're
valid point, bro.
You're well within your rights. And since Georgia was mentioned, let me throw this out there. This is courtesy of Dave number 11 from Stacey Abrams' Twitter account. Breaking: 1 million Georgians have requested their mail ballots for the January 5th runoff elections. Our time is now to elect Warnock and Ossoff to the U.S. Senate. So let's get it done. Request your ballot today. ballotrequest.sos.ga.gov. So if you're in Georgia and you haven't done it yet, and you plan to vote for Ossoff and Warnock, ballotrequest.sos.ga.gov. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once.
Steve, you got yours?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's right here. It's sitting next to the thermostat. I just need to go drop it off in the box, man.
I've got to burn two more days off before the end of the year. I can't carry them over, and I want to use those days to phone bank.
Ooh.
So I got to go out to Stacey Abrams' site, right? You can sign up or something. That's the place to go.
You can even write postcards, mail them to random people, say, "Hey, vote."
Is it? Postcards to voters.com or something like that.
Yep.
And hey, as we near the end of the program, big thanks. Thank you, Roger in Oregon. Thank you so much, man. So the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge is ended. And met, and we now have $350 to end the week fully funded. And thank you, Roger. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll knock, maybe we can finish off yesterday. That's $50 more. And then anything we do after that goes into finishing off today fully funded. Thank you. Thank you, Roger. And thank you in advance to anybody else who jumps in along the way. Thank you a ton.
Now to get off to something else here.
Hey, well, let me ask you, Roger. Last week I was asking you about those herbs that go into Frankfurter Grünsoße. Did you ever check into that? Are those things growable in the U.S.?
I tracked it down. They appear to be, but some of them require slightly different climatic zones, and I wasn't quite sure what you were asking. As I recall, it's a sauce.
Yeah.
And is it a potato-based sauce? Anyhow, it's a sauce. And you add various quantities, and some of the quantities are pretty large for one of them's a cup of something. I forget what it was. and I kind of shined it on to finish it off. Anyhow, what I wanted to get to is a while back, you folks were talking about the old teletype machines and the dot printers and all the rest of that kind of stuff. Back about the time I was in seventh, eighth grade, maybe first beginning of high school, I wasn't driving yet. I had a mom and dad had a friend who was the disc jockey at a local low power radio station, KENL 1340 in Arcata, California. And he had a machine where he would sit with a stack of records and do his patter and then put the records into a jukebox like machine. And it would kind of automate. But one of the things he had to do was do the news, and he really didn't like it. So he'd send me over to the transmitter room where the teletype machine was, and yellow paper came pouring out, and it clackety, clackety, clackety. And he'd send me in there, and he said, okay, I need 4 minutes, 30 seconds of national news or international, and another 3 minutes of national, blah, blah, blah. So go get it. And so I'd go there and sit for an hour and read the teletype as it came off and pick out the news stories based on the time they said it took to read them. And I'd rip them all off. And I think he was out back smoking a doobie or something. But anyhow, he'd come back in with his clipboard and read the news that I fed him for this little low-power AM station. And it was kind of a fun gig that, you know, my folks would drop me off and I'd spend 2 or 3 hours down there and then they'd come pick me up. I guess they went to a party or something because he had the night shift. So it was cheap babysitting to park me at the radio station. Anyhow, just a fun little tidbit of ancient history.
The glories of rip and read.
Yeah, I didn't read them. I just ripped them. But then I did get my FCC license at one time and did have a show on a low-power FM college station. So my claim to fame there was that I was on Memorial Day. Oh, God, this must have been about 1969, something like that. And I devoted my show to – no, it had to be after Kent State. Because my Memorial Day show that time was in memoriam of the anti-war protesters who have been killed or severely maimed. The guy that lost his legs on the railroad tracks in the Bay Area in California and the Kent State people. And so I spent my 2 or 3 hour show doing protest songs. It was fun. Didn't get in trouble for it either. We could do just about anything we wanted because it basically was just piped through the dorms and it was only on the air for about 5 miles around the campus. So you could do anything you want and not get in trouble because nobody listened to it anyhow.
Oh,
Darlene's in the house.
Oh, hey, Darlene. Welcome.
Hi, guys. I thought I would just lead to Steve and Chris. Steve, I didn't, if he's still there, still on the porch.
No, he left.
Okay. Well, I'll email him then, but Bob, if you could, I sent you an email about, if there would be a different day that I should resubscribe.
Yes.
I did not know how to. Okay. So, if you could let me know, I know you've said that in the past, there are certain days that there aren't a lot of people, that send in a subscription. So if there's, I typically had sent my subscription in on the 15th. So if there's another date, if you can email me just to spread out the, and then I can get back to Steve. I do know I want it to claim my prize. I do know I want it to be dark chocolate.
Yeah, okay. Do you want the candies or the potato chips? Do you know?
I wanted to talk to him about. I'm leaning on the candies, but I was curious about the potato chips too. But I don't know how well they'll hold up.
They're chocolate coated, and they're fan freaking tastic.
Oh, you've had them?
Not that brand, but I've had dark chocolate coated potato chips, and you know if they'll last on the shelf at Wally World in Fayetteville,
they'll make it through the mail?
I should like to hope.
That's my concern. That's my concern, is that they won't make it through the mail. But I'll talk to him about it. The other thing is Buddy the Beefalo. I did find out that I guess there's an American Beefalo Association, which I did not know. But I guess that a beefalo is a mix of which you had mentioned before. But they got into some gritty detail in the Connecticut Post about what a beefalo is. So it's 37.5% American bison and domestic and also domesticated cattle. And I guess that it was chosen specifically as the sweet spot of the genetic pool, allowing the best of both of these animals to be present in the meat. So the USDA testing says that it possesses superior vitamin levels, higher protein, nearly a third less cholesterol, 79% less fat, and 66% less calories than conventional beef. So he's the creme de la creme. So I think it's fortunate that he's still on the lam. As they say, they've named it Operation Sneaky Hoof. That's the other thing I found out. It's called Operation Sneaky Hoof. And by the Plymouth Police are having a lot of fun with this, including the Plymouth Police Union, which has raised over $8,500 towards his safe capture and removal into sanctuary in Florida. They were only looking for about $6,300, but now they've got over $8,500. And I guess that they discovered that beefaloes do not like bright lights. So they doused the big spotlight that they had in the corral area that they were trying to capture him in. And they're using thermal imaging. And I guess that the cops like to go out and with thermal imagers, imaging units, and try to look for him on the 800-acre property. And what they're trying to do is slowly narrow the enclosure. It is a makeshift enclosure with metal gates, and the trailer is at the end. And they're trying to, by getting rid of the spotlight so it doesn't deter Buddy, they're trying to further enclose the opening and narrow it enough so that he is encouraged to eventually go into the trailer. So that's their latest plan.
Hey, Darlene, yeah. Quick question for you. Do they play the Pink Panther theme song while this is going on?
That would be funny if they did. I think Buddy might even like it. We're getting a major storm. I don't know. It's still uncertain, but we're supposedly getting a major storm in tomorrow. You know, who know, you know, snow, ice, but he's in a lower elevation than me. So he may just do well hanging out in that 800-acre reservoir land.
Well, you know, you were mentioning the fat content and everything. It's actually, yeah. I've had it. It's actually pretty tasty. But the problem is with that really low fat content, it's hard to do much in terms of, you know, I feel bad talking about this because we're talking about Buddy. I don't want this to be Buddy. But in terms of steaks and stuff, there's no real marbling, and you can ruin it. I mean, even with it ground into burger, you can ruin it in the blink of an eye.
Oh, I believe it.
Because,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It'll dry really out to careful. Nothing.
Oh, yeah. I believe it, absolutely. I don't think, I don't want to say anything negative in terms of that. But the police have really taken Buddy under their wing. That bull's probably the safest bull on the planet right now. So
the safest.
You know,
No.
Headed for the...
He's the safest bull this side of India.
There you go.
Well, yeah. Good point.
This side of India. Yeah. So they've really become attached to him, and it's become, I think, a mission for them. The fact that they named it Operation Sneaky Hoof is one indication. So they want to say
better than Operation Smelly Toes.
Yeah. So that's the latest. And from what I'm seeing, the latest thing about him was posted on September 9th. So.
While
there's a cowbell there, you missed, Bob.
Nothing. Oh, no. I didn't miss it. Nope, I didn't miss it. But while you were reporting, Darlene, I did a quick check, and I would say, just based on what I saw, the 19th looks pretty lonely. 19th of the month.
Okay, the 19th. Okay, yeah. Good. All right, so I'll resubscribe in the higher amount for the 19th.
Okay,
thank you.
And then you can have a nervous breakdown.
And do not, please, I'm just saying this, not that you would ever think of doing it, but if you opt for the potato chips, these are the potato chips you do not use with French onion dip.
Oh.
Yeah, see?
I would think you could just eat them solo and it would
be. Oh, you do. Good. You do. I was just yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I've been waxing rhapsodic about David Chang's Ugly Delicious. Last night I hit the steak episode, and it was so good on so many levels, because things you have to learn. There's a reason. The sexism of food, and there's a segment in there that just blew my mind, because they had a professor of food who talked about the inherent sexism of how we are taught to view food. And so this is in season two, steak. And beyond that, which I found just, I love that eye-opening kind of stuff. The food porn of the aged bone-in ribeyes. Oh my God. And this one artist is sitting around saying, yeah, my steak last night was $300. And to his credit, David Chang looks at him and goes, what's wrong with you? But it's a great show. It really, really is. And I just noticed, Agnes is still grandpuppy sitting. And so I told her this evening, a new episode of The Mandalorian has dropped.
Oh, I was going to ask about that, Bob.
Yeah, I cannot, nor would I, view an episode of The Mandalorian without Agnes by my side.
That's called digging a deep, deep, deep dark hole.
Yes, it is. Oh. Yes, it is, Chris. And so I'm gonna, I don't know. Maybe this weekend we will go and get "Protect the Child" tattooed on her somewhere. She is
just a quick. She's really
that into it, huh? I'm into it too. I really enjoy it.
HBO or is that HBO or
no? No, Disney Plus.
Disney Plus, Darlene.
Oh, okay.
Are you paying for it?
No.
Throw another $10. Mickey Mouse doesn't have enough money. You know that.
No, we share our subscriptions in the family.
Oh.
Are we allowed to say that?
Hey, I watch it for free online, like I do everything.
Yeah, I'm just no good. At that. I try, and it just never works for me. And I don't know why.
But how do you do it, Sparky?
Don't. We'll get sued. He will tell you via email.
Okay. Fred, Zed.
I'll tell you on the back porch.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Chris, participants on the front porch, I'm looking at the latest photo of the corral for Buddy. They've really upgraded everything. I mean, they've made it really nice. It's
well,
a bigger trailer.
$500, sure.
I'm going to try to post a snapshot of it. It's, the fencing looks a lot more solid, too. They're really laying out all the, they're laying out the red carpet for this beefalo.
I want him to live a long and happy life. And by the way, I'd like to add that I was not making fun of Indian culture. I was merely pointing out the fact that a significant number of practitioners of a faith system there do not believe in eating cow. And it's because the cow actually is so valuable uneaten. Learned that on Ugly Delicious, too. The cow is more valuable uneaten than eaten. and provides more uneaten than eaten. So I just, before anybody wanted to hate on me for that.
They kowtow to the cow.
Joey? Joey?
Hey, Bob.
What?
Yeah.
That was actually pretty good.
Is David Chang, is he related to P.F. Chang, the Panda Express Empire?
God, from Joey to you. Actually, in the...
Bob,
in,
they both get club bells.
No, those are Ganeers. As opposed to rings, those are what Steve has invented and calls Ganeers. Those are negative cowbells.
Steve's not here, so it's canceled out.
Ganeers. No, in fact, in another episode, David Chang unloads on P.F. Chang and everything that Americans think is Chinese food.
That's got to be epic.
And then he winds up in China at a real highfalutin place. Where a British expat tries to get him to, well, get succeeds in getting him to taste sea cucumber and deer tendon. And it doesn't, and it does not work, it does not work well. It does not work, he does not dig it.
Hey, wait.
How dare he tell us that the frozen...
Go.
Hey, Bob, just quick. Is it true that Egg Foo Young is not Chinese? Is not actually
nothing,
Chinese?
Nothing in what we know as Chinese food comes from China. The lot of it is an American invention based on Chinese immigrants trying to come up with things that they think Whitey will eat.
Okay. All right. That's all.
Yep. You said something, Todd?
I was just thinking about
Jeremy.
I was, you know what? We're talking about food. This is the forgotten easy side dish. People don't forget about couscous. If you can boil water and measure 2-to-1, you have your side dish. Steam some vegetables, and that's a side dish. And you can season it any way you want. Put some Parmesan cheese on it. I'm just saying, don't forget about the
couscous. Todd, would that get approval in Philly? Couscous?
Pardon me?
Would that get approval in Philly? Couscous?
Absolutely. It gets approval everywhere. Everybody loves couscous. Couscous isn't the bully. Couscous is just amazing.
Well, you want to hear something that'll really blow your mind, Todd?
What's up?
Couscous is actually the ancestor of what we know as Thanksgiving dressing.
Hmm.
No way.
Way. Because what we know as couscous is known further south in like Ghanaian cuisine as kusha. And when African people made the middle passage to North America and the south, and they got their rations of corn, or they were allowed to grow it in their own gardens, they turned around and made it something like home cooking, and they called it kush. Not like bubblegum kush or no.
Not like Sparky's kush.
But it was made, and so that forms the background of what then goes on to become the dressing that we all eat at Thanksgiving.
Wow.
I guess that makes sense.
I mean, I was kind of blown away. I was kind of, you know, everything goes back in this country to things that white people couldn't figure out for themselves.
You know, Bob, if Fox News heard you say that, that'd be another attack on Thanksgiving.
God, I would pay for publicity like that. Oh, and by the way, yeah, the reason I apologized, for my comment about Buddy being safe. Brother Deacon Asa checked in and said, "You're going to eat a murder hornet in hell for that this side of India joke, damn you." Eat a murder hornet in hell. Brother Deacon Asa is Jiminy Cricket, is my Jiminy Cricket. You know, he's just kind of keeping an eye on me there.
Visual is awful.
It, murder hornet in hell? Well, I mean, it sounds like something that would happen there, doesn't it? Oh, and by the way, 5 minutes left to go in the program. I was asked by our anonymous friend who sponsored the When Billionaires Choose You Lose Challenge just mention it again. We've got $350 to go to fully fund this past week of broadcasting. And it kind of is rough when we have to go into a new week still trying to fund the previous one. So if we actually bring in another 50, that'll knock off, that'll finish Thursday. So we will have fully funded Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and we'll be unfunded for today. If by some miracle of good fortune and kindness and generosity, we raise $350, then it's a sure enough community funded Friday on the front porch, community made miracle. Let's see here. How about that? Randy Radar says, I just cooked my first 20-pound turkey last night. I should have gone low and slow, but I blew it. Some of it was undercooked. The stovetop stuffing came out very well as I added Penzi's celery flakes. Well, anything you add Penzi's to is going to work. And yep. Penzi's black pepper, as well as some Weiler's chicken bouillon crystals. Randy continues and says, couscous is great with butter, chopped basil, and chicken bouillon crystals, and zesty Italian dressing. Well, damn, that just sounds good. That sounds really good.
Good ideas.
If you ever need any help, Randy, and you decide to assay another bird, holler, and I'll walk you through the process.
I made fresh broccoli and cheese soup from scratch yesterday, and it was very, very tasty.
Mm.
All fresh ingredients and everything, yeah, from scratch with the flour. Made a. What's the right pronunciation? Is it roux or
yeah.
roe?
No, it's roux. Roux are fish eggs. Roux is a paste made of some sort of fat and flour and sauteed and made to a thick paste in a skillet.
Yeah,
roux is what you do on a boat too, right?
Yes, it is. But that's an ROW, not an ROE.
Okay. Your soup.
These goddamn homonyms.
Mr. Kincaid.
Yes.
I found out what that topic was that I was dinging you on. It's President Trump claims election fraud. Officials disagree. Please comment. Oh boy.
Well, that's right next door to Joe Biden, communist or child of Satan.
Yeah. And I knew before the first call even hit, man, this is going to be a zoo.
Yeah, the maggots are drinking at 6 a.m. today.
The monkey feces was flying, huh?
Oh,
guys?
My God.
And Agnes is listening. My beloved is listening. And I just got two gifts via text message. One is the Mandalorian with the caption, "This is the way." And the second is Baby Yoda. And she sent the message, "Protect the child. I've spoken."
Yeah, protect those orange eggs too. I don't want to give up too much to it. Sorry.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Sorry.
But back to the food porn. I got my baker's ammonia today.
Oh yay!
So I'll be doing some bacon tomorrow and the next day to see if they taste a little bit better with the baker's ammonia instead of the baking powder.
I think you will find it makes a profound difference.
I'm hoping.
And Earther just added, and in hell, murder hornets are the size of small terriers.
Food of the gods, right?
Those are gonna be good, Roger. And just the ammonia cookies that I've had were, I think they were lemon.
Check cookies.
Just look around for those.
These are anise.
Yeah, a lemon ammonia, and then there's what's the other German holiday treat this time of year? Pfefferkuchen?
The Pestalozzi-Praline.
Lebkuchen.
Lebkuchen, yeah. And then there's, I think there's Pfefferkuchen, too.
They don't rise. They don't use any of the leavening agents.
Right, yeah. What was that, Todd, about? I heard the word praline.
I was making a joke, pestilence pralines. But
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up. It's been a good conversation, a dandy conversation. I love the detail that we get into in these roundtable discussions. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. I do appreciate it. Moran Monday will be here before we know it. And if anybody on the overnight crew or the over-the-weekend crew wants to help, we finished up with a hole to dig out come Moran Monday. We can fill it in some. The more, the merrier. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your subscriptions, PayPal and Patreon, your kind contributions a la carte or combinations of all of the above with some of you. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve, Brother Deacon Steve, in the chat room. Thank you, Sparky, moderating low these many years. The Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, also including our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm trying to get to spring early, if you can't tell. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice. A little bit of good news today. At the Widows Creek Fossil Plant near Stevenson, Alabama, the last of the 1,000-foot-tall smokestacks at that that retired coal-fired nightmare along the Tennessee River was taken down in a controlled demolition. The ground will be allegedly, so says TVA, cleaned up and repurposed for commercial purposes. For economic redevelopment there in Jackson County, Alabama. That's a win. And for all I know, the Beyond Coal campaign of the Sierra Club had something to do with retiring that plant in 2015. Every time another coal plant shuts down, it's not an angel gets its wings, a child gets its breath. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Hey, and thanks, Jude. Jude's sending me along a care package of See's candies, including the chocolate lollipops and the sugar-free butterscotch. Yay! Thank you, Jude. Now, the standard deal applies. Stay home if you can. If you can't stay home, stay safe. That means wear your mask. That means wear your gloves. You see, the nice thing is, when you've been out with your mask on, you take your mask off with your gloves still on, and then you sanitize the gloves, then you take the gloves off, then you sanitize your hands, and you're feeling pretty damn good about things. I mean, you can probably just, you know, touch your face all you want to. But, you know, those things are so good. Wash your hands, carry your hand sanitizer everywhere you go. I've got a little baby Yoda bottle of hand sanitizer I take with me. And observe social distancing, 10 feet if you're with people who are wearing masks, and a country mile if you're around people who aren't. And above all, if you come into contact with someone who tells you, "I'm fighting against the tyranny," T-Y-R-A-N-Y, observe that, or avoid that probably intoxicated person like the plague, because he is. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later, y'all.